The Abbott government is moving quickly with its plans to whip the budget back into shape. Yesterday, it announced a scoping study into the sale of Medibank Private, which could raise upwards of $4 billion, according to some estimates. The government also released the draft legislation for the repeal of Labor's mining tax. The government wants the tax to go, along with a raft of measures which were to be funded by the tax. One other measure is also on the chopping block. That's the school kids' bonus, though it was never directly funded from the mining tax. The Shadow Treasurer, Chris Bowen, says cutting the school kids' bonus will cost families with two kids up to $15,000.
Abolishing small business tax breaks and abolishing the school kids' bonus are fundamentally wrong. And I make this point, the school kids' bonus wasn't even paid for by the minerals resource rent tax. For the new government to conflate the two issues shows a cynical and arrogant approach.
That's Shadow Treasurer Chris Bowen. A massive hit on ordinary, everyday working Australians, according to the opposition. The Finance Minister, Matthias Cormann, joins us now very early from Perth, for which we thank him. Minister, thank you very much for joining us at this hour.
Good morning, Fran.
Why are you scrapping the school kids' bonus as part of the repeal of the mining tax? Chris Bowen says school kids' bonus not even funded by the mining tax.
We've inherited a budget in a mess from the Labor Party. I mean, this financial year alone, we went from a promised surplus to an $18 billion deficit at budget time to a $30 billion deficit at the election, and it's still deteriorating. I mean, we were very clear and very explicit in the lead-up to the election that should we be successful, that the school's kids' bonus would go. Essentially, right now, if we were to persist with the school's kids bonus, we would continue to borrow money to give it away. We would continue to borrow money that we haven't got to give it away. Now, in the Labor Party, in relation to their failed mining tax, had a whole series of promises attached to it that weren't funded. At various times, they scrapped things, they replaced them with other things. I mean, if you go through the whole sequence of promises that they have attached to the mining tax over time, you'll find that the school's kids bonus replaced one of the previous promises attached to the mining tax that they didn't proceed with at some point in time.
But you are accepting that when you say scrapping the mining tax will save $13 billion, that actually the school kids bonus was not funded by the mining tax?
Well, we don't accept that. The school kids bonus replaced some other promise that the Labor Party attached to the mining tax initially, and as such it is a measure that replaced the previous measure that was attached to the mining tax. I mean, okay. It was essentially a substitution.
The government's abolishing the mining tax because it failed to raise, quote, the substantial revenue predicted by Labor, which it certainly did, well below forecast, the tax revenue from the tax so far. The latest forecast, though, which came out just before the election, did put the revenue from the mining tax at $4 billion over the forward estimates. Now, it's nothing like Labor promised, but nevertheless, it's a decent sum. And since that calculation, the iron ore price has risen again. It's back up to, I think, $133 a tonne today. Considering the budget trouble we're in, why would you turn your back on a revenue stream like that?
The mining tax is a bad tax. It raised 95% less than originally forecast. I mean, when Wayne Swan first announced the MRRT, he said it would raise $4 billion in year one. And, of course, it raised $200 million, we were told.
Sure, but looking forward, it's forecast to raise $4 billion over the forward estimates. That's what Treasury's forecast.
Well, what the government wanted us to believe is that even though it raised 95% less than forecast in year one, that somehow over the forward estimates, it would increase by about 1,000% again. We don't believe that. Now, I mean, furthermore, you got to understand that this is a very complex, highly distorting, highly inefficient tax, which is costly to administer for the ITO, which is costly to comply with for the mining industry. It is tying up an important industry for Australia in massive and costly red tape. It is holding back our economy. It is holding back our capacity to create more jobs. It is a tax which is bad for the economy, bad for jobs, bad for investment. I mean, we are committed to a stronger growth and more jobs. Stronger growth will help us to raise more revenue for government in the future. as well as all of the other benefits that come with it.
You want to scrap the tax, the mining tax, from the 1st of July. The Greens will oppose it. They've been clear on that. Labor's not yet publicly said what it'll do. There's no certainty, absolutely no certainty, you'll get this through. The current Senate is there. Have you spoken to members of the new Senate yet? Clive Palmer, for instance, is on the record saying he wants the tax abolished.
Well, we will be putting our mining tax repeal and package and our carbon tax repeal legislation to the current Parliament, including the current Senate. And if the Labor Party cared about our economy, if the Labor Party cared about jobs, if the Labor Party cared about repairing the budget mess they've left behind, they would support our carbon tax repeal and our mining tax repeal legislation. We're not making any assumptions about what may or may not happen in this Parliament. We will put the legislation forward. We will make our case. And if the Labor Party had any interest in the national interest, they would support our legislation.
It's 12 past eight on Breakfast. We're joined by the Finance Minister, Matthias Cormann. Minister, Medibank Private, you've commissioned a scoping study now into the privatisation or the sale of Medibank Private. How much do you hope to raise from selling it?
Well, look, I mean, we're not getting ahead of ourselves. We are committed to the sale of Medibank Private because it's a commercial business that is operating in a well-functioning, highly competitive market with 34 health funds. There is no compelling policy reason for the government to continue to own a private health fund. And in particular, given that the government is the regulator of the health insurance market, to also be one of the largest market participants actually puts us into a position of conflict. Now,
just on that, the compelling, no compelling policy reasons, the reason that's always been given, offered most prominently in the past, is that a government-owned insurer in that pool does help keep downward pressure on premium increases. And they say Medibank Private has done that. It's had the lowest of the premium rises over the last number of years.
Well, that's just not true. I mean, the ownership of Medibank has got absolutely no relevance to the level of premium because, I mean, Medibank, like any other health fund, operates in a highly competitive market, so Medibank, whether in public or private ownership, will have to be mindful of the level of premium if they want to remain competitive moving forward.
But it has had the lowest of the premium increases.
Well, I think if you find there's ups and downs and swings and roundabouts from year to year. And secondly, the level of premiums and premium changes are highly regulated. Medibank Private, whether in public ownership or in private ownership, would continue to have to comply with all of the regulatory requirements in terms of premium change. Their premium change proposals would continue to be scrutinized by the Private Health Insurance Administration Council in the exact same way. There's absolutely no difference compared to who actually owns the corporation, the company, Medibank Private.
The last time Medibank Private was valued, which I think was under a scoping study under previous Coalition Finance Minister Nick Minchin, if my memory is correct, it was valued at more than $4 billion. Senate estimates heard in October last year that in the previous 3 years, the federal government received a $1 billion dividend and taxes from Medibank Private. Does it make economic sense to sell it and forsake that regular revenue stream? I mean, short-term gain for long-term loss?
Well, firstly, I mean, you're just supporting my previous argument. I mean, the federal government under Labor as the only shareholder took, in fact, $1.4 billion out of Medibank since Labor made them into a for-profit company in 1 July. That includes $600 million in special dividends. I mean, the Labor Party, whenever they were desperate for more cash, which was often, they went after companies like Medibank and ask them for special dividends. Now, there's a limit to how often you can get special dividends out of the capital reserves of a company like Medibank, capital reserves which were accumulated by members of Medibank on the back of their contributions. Now, so what we're saying is actually better for Medibank members if they're no longer exposed to a government in Canberra, which in the future, if the Labor Party ever was in government again, would go after them for special dividends whenever they're short of cash, because that actually puts upward pressure on premiums.
There's also a suggestion from the Treasurer now that Medibank Private could do the job of the new Disability Care Australia. That's a statutory body established to oversee and administer the National Disability Insurance Scheme. Would it be appropriate to hand that task, massive task, to a private entity? That's like handing Medicare to a private health insurance operator to administer, isn't it?
Well, again, let's not get ahead of ourselves, but Medibank Private does provide a whole series of services to government. For example, Medibank Private provides some health services for our defence forces. They provide various health-related telephone lines, help services. I mean, if at some point in the future another area of government wants to essentially tender out some services, then Medibank, like any other company or any other provider that has got the capability of providing that service, has got the capacity to tender for that.
But is the government signalling it's looking at unwinding the statutory body that's currently in place to administer Disability Care Australia?
Not at all. I mean, I've seen the speculation in the paper. I've seen the comments from the Treasurer. I mean, obviously, this whole area is in the area of responsibility of my colleague, Senator Mitch Fifield. I'm personally not aware of what he is or what he's not planning in relation in that regard. But if there are aspects of that particular area of policy that ultimately might be contracted to a private service provider, the same as there are aspects of in the immigration portfolio, in the defence portfolio, or in a whole range of other portfolio where service delivery or aspects of service delivery are contracted to not-for-profit or to private service providers, then Medibank, like they have done in the past, would be able to tender for those services in the future. There's absolutely no difference whether they are in public hands or in private hands in terms of their capacity to do that.
We're speaking with Federal Finance Minister Matthias Cormann. Minister, directly within your portfolio responsibilities is the matter of parliamentary expenses. That's your department that administers that. Your colleague in Western Australia, Don Randall, has now given a public explanation of sorts for his taxpayer funded trip to Cairns, where he owns an investment property, and there was a question mark over the electoral business there. He says he flew from Perth to Cairns in his capacity as Shadow Parliamentary Secretary for Local Government. No other detail around that. In your view, as the Finance Minister, is that enough explanation?
Well, I put the question the other way. I mean, do you think that the government should be asking members of the current opposition to detail the meetings they're having with whom and what about before a judgment is made on whether a particular meeting falls within or outside the official business?
It's complex, isn't it? Because without more details, it's difficult to judge what's bona fide and not, and yet clearly there are some expense claims made that are outside the guidelines, and that's why people are paying back.
And as members of Parliament, we've obviously got a job to do. It involves travel from time to time, and let me assure you, as somebody who travels way too much, it is not one of the better parts of my job. But, I mean, the point I'm just making to you, I mean, we as members of Parliament are asked to certify that our claims are related to official business, to electorate business, or so on. I'm not sure that it would be practicable, both in terms of managing the compliance side of it on the public service end, nor desirable on the side of the opposition, and I'd be interested in the opposition's point of view on this. I don't think it'd be practicable for people to be required to provide great details about who they meet with in relation to what, for a public servant then to second guess whether or not a particular meeting it falls within or outside the scope of official business. I mean, in opposition, you have all sorts of meetings in relation to all sorts of matters in order to pursue, your responsibilities.
Minister, thank you very much for joining us, and I really do appreciate you getting up so early to do this interview with us this morning.
No worries. Have a good day.
Finance Minister Matthias Cormann joining us from Perth. It's very early in Perth. It's 8:20 on Breakfast.